When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Two-Footed Podcast here on EPL Index. Now, before we kick things off today, I just want to share something with everybody. This episode is brought to you by our partners at Skybet, and we've teamed up with Skybet because they truly understand what it means to be a fan. Skybet appreciates the length that people go through to support their team in all areas, whether you're a match-going fan or otherwise, and there's just no better fit for us right now than a partnership with the good folks at Skybet. So with that said, let's go. What's good, boys and girls? Two-Footed Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 19th of April. I hope you're all well and having yourselves a pleasant day. I lost my glasses yesterday, so do bear with me as I'm a bit squintier than normal today. Today is one of our Skybet sponsored shows. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go through the lower leagues, which are obviously the Skybet Championship, the Skybet League One and Skybet League Two. So let's kick off with the Skybet Championship and what we have this weekend to look forward to. So let's get the ball rolling and dive into the weekend's lower league games with Skybet. So in the Championship, it's been a strange few weeks. It really has. Nobody has seemed to really want to go and win the Championship. Southampton won 3-0 at the weekend, made it three straight wins, but they're still 5 points off top. Now, they do have a game in hand over both Leeds and Ipswich, but they've got a significantly worse goal difference than both Leeds and Leicester. But they are in form, and with four games left, could they potentially edge their way in? Right now, we have Ipswich top, 89 points from 43 games. Leicester second, 88 from 42, and Leeds third, 87 from 43, before the drop to Saints, 84 from 42, and then the big drop to West Brom on 72 from 43. Norwich now look near certain to claim that sixth and final spot to get a playoff berth. They are 6 points ahead of Hull. Hull do have a game in hand, but Norwich have a significantly better goal difference and Hull have been quite inconsistent. Coventry, unfortunately, just ran out of steam at the wrong time for them. I would consider them out of the mix. Unless Hull can overhaul Norwich, we are going to get Norwich in the playoffs. As things stand, it will be Norwich against Leeds, Southampton against West Brom, but that top two is still shaky. This weekend, we have Leicester against West Brom in a huge game, 12:30 kickoff. Then the 3 p.m.s, Watford versus Hull. That's a big game, obviously, for Hull. Sunderland-Millwall, which at this point is a nothing game. Sunderland are going to finish in mid-table. Millwall, with the back-to-back wins, have done enough to pull themselves clear, I think, of the relegation spots. They're now 6 points ahead of Huddersfield. Huddersfield have 3 games left, same as Millwall. I don't see there being any variance there for Millwall. I think they're going to be fine. We get Rotherham versus Birmingham. Now, Rotherham are done and dusted, but Birmingham need to win games. They're currently 1 point ahead of Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday with three games left. 2 points behind Stoke and QPR, three behind Plymouth, and four behind Blackburn. And any of those teams could go down with Rotherham. And Birmingham need to make sure they don't let the opportunity to take 3 points this weekend slip through their hands. Must win for Birmingham. Must win for Huddersfield at home to Swansea. Swansea, nothing to play for, 53 points. They're absolutely safe. They are 9 points clear of the relegation zone and with a much better goal difference. So while they technically need 1 point, what they really are looking for is one of Huddersfield or Sheffield Wednesday to drop points. And this is an opportunity for Swansea to both secure promotion and stick the knife into Huddersfield. But Huddersfield are at home. Hopefully the home crowd can carry them. Norwich home to Bristol. That's an easier game than Hull have. Hull going away to Watford. Norwich home to Bristol. Bristol are 12th. They've had a decent run of late, but they're not going to be in the playoffs, barring a miracle. They would need to win all three games and basically, actually, no, they can't make the playoffs regardless, so ignore me. They're 13 points outside the playoffs. They can't make the playoffs. So Bristol have nothing to play for. So potentially that leans into Norwich's favour. Stoke versus Plymouth. That is two teams that do need points just to secure survival. I think a draw is probably a result both teams would take at the moment. Cardiff versus Southampton. Cardiff are 11th, won't be in the playoffs. But Saints, they're in form. They're the most informed team in the division. Potentially, there is going to be an automatic promotion berth for them. But they need to keep winning. And this is a game that they must win. QPR home to Preston. Preston have nothing to play for. 8 points off the promotion spots. There are three games left, but they're not going to get into the playoff spots. But, I mean, QPR, they're another team that needs to win. They just need to win a game and secure themselves a spot in the division for next season. They've had a bizarre season. They need to win. Blackburn versus Sheffield Wednesday. Talk about relegation six-pointer. A Blackburn win, they'll be safe, and Sheffield Wednesday will be right on the brink of relegation. But a Sheffield Wednesday win potentially lifts them out of the bottom three ahead of Huddersfield and Birmingham. Now, their goal difference is a major factor here. They'd be level in points with QPR and Stoke, but with much worse goal difference. But it would be massive for Sheffield Wednesday if they could win this. And then finally, the big game is Monday night, or the other big game, Leicester-West Brom, obviously has won. We get Middlesbrough versus Leeds. Now, Ipswich do not play this weekend. They would have been playing Coventry, but Coventry obviously are in the FA Cup semi-final taking on Manchester City. That game will be replayed on the 30th of April, or played on the 30th of April. So Ipswich not playing does give Leicester and Leeds the chance to jump them. And for Leicester, they would be ahead of them then, potentially, with a win or a draw, with the same number of games played. Leeds will have played a game more. Leeds away to Middlesbrough. Borough have nothing to play for, but it is a Yorkshire derby. So maybe a bit of pride comes into it. And I'm sure they'd love nothing more than to put a dint or a dent. Dint or dent? I'm not really sure. Dent, probably. Dint is like a small dent, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it's just an Irish thing. It would be a big blow to Leeds if they were to drop points here. Into League One. Portsmouth are up. They are League One, Sky Bet League One champions. Derby County, right on the brink. 3 points clear of Bolton. Same number of games played. Significantly better goal difference at this point. 5 goals is significant. One more win is all Derby will need. And that should be them promoted to the Sky Bet Championship, which, given what they've been through in the last couple of years, would be enormous. Now, Bolton have also been through the ringer. And if I was to pick one team from the playoffs that I would like to see come up, it would be Bolton. Given, I know Wigan have been through the ringer as well, Leighton Orient as well, but they're not going to be in that playoff mix. Derby sit second. One win should do it for them. Pompey on 94, Derby on 86, Bolton on 83, Peterborough on 80. Now, Peterborough do have a game in hand, but Bolton have the better goal difference. Barnsley on 75, Oxford United on 73, but Lincoln City on 71 and Blackpool on 70 could still get themselves above Oxford. Lincoln have the better goal difference, but Oxford then have a better goal difference than Blackpool. But Blackpool have won three in a row. They're the only side in the Sky Bet League One to have won the last three games in a row. So after Pompey, there's still quite a bit to play for. We've obviously got quite the mess at the bottom of that division. Carlisle are gone. Fleetwood are as good as gone. But Port Vale could still stay up, but they've lost four or five. Cheltenham had a huge win in the week, going to Burton and winning 2-1. Potentially keeping themselves afloat. Four go down, remember. But they're now 2 points behind Burton with a game in hand. And they have a better goal difference as well. I would say it's two from three. Burton, Cheltenham, Port Vale to go down. Fleetwood, I think we can write off. Cambridge should be fine. They're 3 points clear of Burton and they have a game in hand. They should be okay. This weekend, Oxford United versus Stevenage. That's obviously a huge game for Oxford, looking to secure that sixth and final playoff berth, or fourth and final playoff berth, I should say, sixth place. But Stevenage, they've been pretty good this year. They're ninth. They are only 6 points off Oxford. They do have a much worse goal difference, though. They don't have a path to claiming a playoff spot. Oxford just need to go and win. Northampton Town against Exeter. Both of these sides are firmly in the mid-table. Neither of them are going up. Neither of them are going down. That's one to probably avoid. Cambridge against Derby. This is Derby's big chance to secure promotion. But for Cambridge, like I said, they do have points that they need to stay in the division. Most likely, it's very possible that neither Port Vale or Cheltenham win another game and they stay up regardless, but they'd want to do it by themselves. Carlisle versus Wickham. Carlisle are done. Wickham firmly in the mid-table with nothing to play for. Leighton Orient against Fleetwood. This is why I think you can write off Fleetwood. Leighton Orient, not going to be a playoff team, but they are a good team, and Fleetwood are just not. So you'd fancy Leighton Orient to get the win, and that would condemn Fleetwood to life in Sky Bet League 2 for next season. Blackpool against Barnsley, that's a big one, because Blackpool are still in with a chance of the playoffs. Barnsley are in the playoff spots at the moment. Now, I assume they'll be there no matter what, but they have lost three or four, only 1 point from the last four games. So it is possible that if Oxford won one of their last two games and either Lincoln or Blackpool won both of their last two games, they could jump Barnsley. So if Blackpool were to win this, they would move to within 2 points of Barnsley ahead of the final day. Wait a second. Yeah, where they take on Reading away from home, who are, you know, well down the table, currently sitting in 17th. Barnsley's final game is Northampton. Now, Barnsley would be favourites to win that game at home, but Northampton aren't bad. They're in 11th. They're top half team. And if they were to draw that one, then Blackpool, with a win in this game and then potentially the win in the following game, Their goal difference could, which is only a two-goal gap at the moment, could go above Barnsley and get them into the playoffs. So Blackpool do have something to really cling on to in this one. Burton versus Reading. Burton need the win to stay up. Simple as that. Charlton versus Shrewsbury. Shrewsbury probably safe, but they'd probably like a point. Charlton will be fine, but neither of them pulling up any trees. Bolton against Port Vale. Big opportunity for Bolton here. Port Vale, not very good. A win for Bolton and Port Vale could be condemned to life in League Two if, say, Cheltenham won and Burton drew. There would be no path to survival. Actually, if Cheltenham win, there's no path to survival for Port Vale. So they'll be down. So moving on then. Portsmouth against Wigan. Pompey are up. They can, you know, turn up drunk if they want. Wigan, they're 15th. They're not going anywhere at the moment. So all that matters for them is that the club is alive. That's really the only thing that is of concern. Cheltenham against Lincoln. Lincoln are 7th. Lincoln have gotten themselves to the edge of the playoff picture, obviously. 2 points behind Oxford, but with a better goal difference. So big game for them. If they win, potentially they jump Oxford into those playoff spots. Cheltenham need the win. Like, they have to win. So that's a big, big game. And then finally, it's Bristol against Peterborough. Peterborough are going to be in the playoffs. Bristol are stuck firmly in mid-table. Nothing to really play for. Into Skybet League 2. Again, two games left. Stockport are up. Mansfield are up. Wrexham are up. Nothing to really be discussed in that regard. The only thing that matters now is who finishes a higher, Wrexham or Mansfield. Both with two games left. Mansfield have the better goal difference. They both have 82 points. 7 behind Stockport, who really aren't taking their foot off the gas. I mean, 5 wins in a row. Just hammering home the fact that they're the best team in League 2 this year. MK Dons sit 4th, Crewe 5th, Barrow 6th, and Crawley 7th. That would be the playoffs as things stand. However, Doncaster have won 5 in a row and have a game in hand and are only 2 points behind Crawley. So all of a sudden, Doncaster are a big threat. Gillingham are only 3 points behind Crawley. AFC Wimbledon and Harrogate are only 4 points behind. But with only 2 games left, I think you can rule out Gillingham based on goal difference and AFC Wimbledon and Harrogate based on the fact that it's 4 points. I think that's just too many to make up with 2 games left. Now, Crawley are struggling and Barrow are struggling at the moment. 3 wins and a draw in the last 4 for Barrow. 2 wins and a draw in the last 3 for Crawley. Walsall, they've wobbled as well. They did win last time out. But there's still a lot to be played for there in terms of not just the 7th spot, but the 6th spot as well. Like, it wouldn't be a surprise if come the end of the season, Barrow and Crawley miss out. But Barrow do have a game in hand, which could be their saving grace. But I think Doncaster are the team to watch there. At the bottom, obviously, 2 go down. Forest Green have been relegated. Back-to-back relegations for a club that were so well run for so long and then did a very stupid thing around the Rob Edwards situation and then compounded that with bad appointment after bad appointment, including our friend and hero, Big Dunk. And at that, we'll take the Big Dunk break. And we'll have a look at what Duncan Ferguson's Inverness Caledonian Thistle have gotten up to. Last time out, a big win away to Queen's Park. That's back-to-back wins for Big Dunk. Doesn't happen very often, so drink it in. Lean into it. The Big Dunk experience for all. 11 wins now from his 30 games. At Inverness Caledonian Thistle. 11 wins, 10 draws, 9 defeats. For Big Dunk, 36.67% win percentage is absolutely magnificent. They finish with Raith Rovers this weekend. Raith are second, so you'd expect them to win. But as things stand, Inverness are out of the relegation playoff and would be safe. Then they play Dunfermline. They're fifth, mid-table, only 4 points ahead of Inverness. So potentially, there's a point to be had there for Inverness. It's away from home. And then the final game, a Friday night under the lights. Can you imagine anything better than going to watch Duncan Ferguson football on a Friday night under the lights at home to Greenock Morton, who are only 3 points ahead of Inverness right now with a worse goal difference. So potentially, Big Dunk could lead a charge to fifth in a 10-team league, which for Big Dunk, you'd give them trophies for that. That would be magnificent. Right, moving back to League Two this weekend. Crewe versus Wrexham, nothing to play for there. Crewe are fifth, will be in the playoffs. Wrexham are up. It's a good opportunity for Crewe to get 3 points. Wrexham are probably still drunk. Stockport versus Accrington Stanley should be an easy win for Stockport. Accrington Stanley are 18th and not very good. Newport against Salford City. Unfortunately, Salford City have done just enough to keep themselves safe, but that's a very sorry affair between 16th and 20th. Newport have lost five in a row. Sutton United versus Crawley. Obviously, Crawley need to keep picking up points to secure a playoff spot. And Sutton, I mean, they're desperate for the win. They need to win both games and hope that Colchester pick up no more than 1 point from their remaining three games. But Colchester have won back-to-back games. So as things stand, Sutton look likely to go down. And with Crawley this weekend, that's potentially the nail in the coffin. Grimsby versus Swindon, another sorry affair. Swindon are 19th. Grimsby are 21st, still potentially at risk of going down, but they'd need either two heavy defeats for themselves, Colchester to win at least one game and Sutton to win both games, or some sort of combination like that, where maybe Sutton win both games heavily and Grimsby lose both games by whatever score. But Grimsby should be fine, but that's a very sorry game. Walsall against Bradford. Obviously, like I said, Walsall just outside the playoff spots. Bradford are stuck in mid-table. Harrogate against MK Dons. Harrogate still kind of have some sort of chance of sneaking in. It's unlikely, and MK Dons are a better team. Mansfield versus Gillingham. This is part of why I just don't think Gillingham have much of a chance, because Mansfield is a tough away game for them. Morecambe against Forest Green. Morecambe are 15th. They've lost three in a row, but they should still beat Forest Green. Notts County versus Colchester. Notts County haven't had as good a season as Wrexham, but they've certainly survived comfortably back in the Football League. Tough game for Colchester. Obviously, still at risk of relegation, but I think they've probably done enough. Tranmere against AFC Wimbledon. It's a bridge too far for AFC Wimbledon. Tranmere, 17th and going nowhere. And then lastly, Doncaster against Barrow in a massive game. So like I said, Doncaster have won five in a row. Barrow have lost three and drawn one of their last four. So Doncaster come into this in great form, Barrow in bad form. It's in Doncaster. And if Doncaster win, they'll be 2 points behind Barrow. Barrow will have a better goal difference. They'll both have two games left. Barrow play Bradford in the week on Tuesday. Doncaster travel to Colchester. Both of them should win that game. And then their final games, Barrow are home to Mansfield. Now, Mansfield won't have anything to play for, but maybe they just want to finish second. Doncaster go to Gillingham, not an easy one, but probably easier than Mansfield. So Doncaster do have a real shot here. Crawley play Grimsby in their final game. So Crawley should, given it's Sutton United away, and Grimsby home. Crawley should get a playoff spot. So Barrow are probably the one at risk there. Now, National League. This is the final match week in the National League. Chesterfield secured promotion weeks and weeks ago and have gone on holiday. They've lost four in a row. They're still 12 points clear of Barnet. But they had a real chance to have a historic season points-wise. And they just didn't really bother. Now, they weren't going to get to Notts County's 111 from last year. Oh, sorry, Wrexham's 111 from last year. But they could have matched Notts County's 107 or even broken it. Like, they could have gotten to 110, but they obviously didn't need to. Barnet and Bromley will be in the playoff. Altrincham, Solihull Moors and Gateshead, one of them will not make it. At the moment, Gateshead are the one on the out, but they do have a much better goal difference than Solihull. Oxford City are down. The final relegation spot is between Dorking and Kidderminster. Kidderminster are a point ahead and have a better goal difference. So let's get into the games. Chesterfield against Maidenhead. Chesterfield, obviously top. Maidenhead, they are 13th. But they've won 4 of 5 and drawn the other. So they're one of the two most informed teams in the division. And Chesterfield don't seem to care. So potentially Maidenhead win. Altrincham against Oxford. Altrincham need the win to secure the playoff spot. Oxford are relegated and very, very poor. So should be favourable there. Dorking against Hartlepool. Hartlepool are 14th. Nothing to play for. So a chance for Dorking to save themselves. Barnet against Kidderminster. Barnet are secure in the playoffs, so maybe rest a bunch of players. Kidderminster will need a win if Dorking win. Southend against Rochdale, 9th versus 11th, nothing to play for there. Eastleigh against Halifax Town, that is 12th taking on 7th. Neither team has anything to play for. Solihull against York. Solihull need the win. York are currently 18th. Solihull should get the win. Oldham against Wealdstone. Oldham are 10th. Wealdstone are 17th. Nothing to play for there. Woking against Fields. I can never remember. Again, nothing really at stake here. 20th versus 16th. Just pride, really. Dagenham and Redbridge, or the mighty Dagenham and Redbridge, as they used to be known, taking on Aldershot. They are 15th and 8th. Nothing to play for. Gateshead versus Bromley. So, huge game for Gateshead, who must win to get into the playoffs, unless Solihull lose, which I don't expect them to do. But they're gambling on one of those two teams dropping points. Bromley, nothing to play for, so they'll probably rest players. So it does feed into Gateshead's chances. And then finally, Boreham Wood against Ebbsfleet. Boreham Wood are 21st and safe. Ebbsfleet are 19th and safe, nothing to play for. All of those National League games are at 12:30 tomorrow. All of the, League Two games are 12:30, except Crewe versus Wrexham. All of the games are 3 p.m. except Crewe versus Wrexham, which is at 12:30. In League One, we have Oxford Stevenage tonight at 8 p.m. Northampton Exeter is tomorrow at 2 p.m. And all the rest of the games are at 3 p.m. And then in the Skybet Championship, Leicester, West Brom, tomorrow 12:30. QPR, Preston, tomorrow 5:15. Blackburn, Sheffield Wednesday, Sunday at 12:30. Middlesbrough, Leeds, Monday 8 p.m. And all the rest are 3 p.m. tomorrow. So there we go. We'll go to break back after this. Right, welcome back. So the hearing has been set for Nottingham Forest appeal against their 4-point deduction. That will be this Wednesday, April the 24th. The hearing is expected to be wrapped up within a day, but no final decision will be made on Wednesday, and Forest will have to wait to discover if they've been successful. So this continues to drag on and on. We obviously have an Everton appeal to come as well. Sir Chips Keswick, the former chairman of Arsenal, has sadly passed away at the age of 84. Joined the board in 2005, accepted the role of chairman in 2013 when Peter Hill Wood stepped down, and he spent 7 years as the chairman of Arsenal. He previously in his career had worked in the banking industry and was a director for the Bank of England. I know he's very highly thought of at Arsenal, very close with Arsene Wenger. What else do we have? Emi Martinez will be suspended from the first leg of Aston Villa's Europa Conference League semi-finals against Olympiacos. The first leg is at home, so at least that's the one he's missing, rather than the away one, which is when you'd really want him. Villa, obviously the only English team left in European competition. And if you're wondering, have I purposely avoided talking about the Liverpool game last night? Yes, I have. So there you go. In quite a surprising move, Julian Nagelsmann has signed a contract extension to stay in charge of Germany until after the 2026 World Cup. He had been widely tipped to go back to Bayern, but he has decided to stay where he is. And fair play to him, because I think there's a real opportunity there. I think there's a lot of exciting talent in the German national team right now. And I think when you look at their under-21 team, there's another crop of young players that are really and truly going to form one of the better teams in the next 4 to 5 years. Now, obviously, there isn't a young goalkeeper that stands out to me. That's possibly through ignorance more than anything. I know Atubolu at Freiburg is very highly regarded. I haven't seen much of him. He's been first choice this year. I haven't watched much of Freiburg this year, but he is highly regarded. So maybe it will be him. Chark Ernst at Hertha Berlin, also very, very highly regarded. Defensively, though, Luka Netz, I think, has a shot to be a really, really good left back. Plays for Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's one to keep an eye on. I think he's got a big future. Leandro Morgalla, who's at RB Salzburg, very, very highly thought of as well. They nicked him off 1860 Munich. In terms of central defenders, I think everybody has been impressed with Malik Thiaw and what they've seen of him. You've obviously got Nico Schlotterbeck, who's tremendous. I still have big hope for Armel Belakovic. So I think there's a good group there that you can lean into. You've still got David Rahm, is only 25 as well and has a long future ahead of him. There's a few others that have been in and around squads over the last number of years that, you know, can still contribute for the foreseeable. People like Kleshtemann, people like Jonathan Tah, people like obviously Joshua Kimmich. But I do think Malik Thiaw and Schlotterbeck as two-thirds of a back three could be really good. Now, finding the third one, Belakovic for me wouldn't be the third one. I want someone to play that central role, be more the organiser. And I mean, look, maybe it's Jonathan Tah who's done that for Leverkusen this year. Maybe it's Nicolas Soule who, you know, is someone the manager is close to, having had him at Hoffenheim. We'll see. But ahead of that, then, you've obviously got two superstars in the making in Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirtz. So it's about building around them. Pavlovic, the youngster, has come through at Bayern, looks a real talent. Felix Nemecha at Dortmund, I really like. I think he's a good player. Eric Martel at Cologne, very, very good. Beyond that, I'm not overly familiar with a lot of these other midfielders that have been kind of in the under 21 squad. And the senior squad midfielders are, I would say, some of them are past their best, like Leon Goretzka. But again, Joshua Kimmich can do a job for you in midfield. Toni Kroos is back, whether that's just for the World Cup or beyond, we'll wait and see. Chris Furyk, who's come into the national squad over the last 12 months, having a great year with Stuttgart. He's another one that's an interesting player. You've got Gundogan, you've got Pascal Gross. The midfield group does need a little bit of work. But again, if we're looking longer term, maybe there's some star in the making in the under-18s or even below that. Then in attack, I mean, you've got the big names. You've got Kai Havertz. You've got Thomas Muller, Serge Gnabry, Leroy Sané, Timo Werner. I really like Kevin Shadé. I think he's got a real chance. I like Makoko. He needs to get away from Borussia Dortmund for a while, even if it's just a loan. I quite like Max Beyer of Hoffenheim. And obviously Adeyemi is one I do think has a real chance. Nelson Vieper, who's at Mainz, I don't expect to be at Mainz for long with them going down. He's just one to keep an eye on as well. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely talent available to Germany. It's just a matter of, can they take advantage of that talent? Can they get it all functioning together? And if they go with a front three of, say, Bayer as the nine with Wirtz and Musiala behind him, that's quite fun. And then Luka next maybe is a left wing back, Kimmich is a right wing back. That makes the midfield less of an issue, because you only need two to go in there. And they've got more than enough midfielders to form a good midfield too. Emre Can, obviously another option in there as well. So yeah, I mean, I think Germany should be quite excited about the next years. You've got Musiala and Wirtz. They're two of the best young players in the world. Very few countries have a duo as exciting as that for the long term. Very, very few. They're two special, special players. Right. Let's do the gossip. We have 3 days worth because we've got two to catch up on. So let's go through. We'll start with Wednesday's news and see what hopes and dreams are being made up for us. Arsenal are expected to revive their interest in Douglas Luiz this summer. Fulham have identified Trevo Chalobah as a potential replacement for Tosin Adarabioyo. That would be a good move. It would be a good move for Fulham, for sure. Manchester United have switched their attention to Jean-Claire Todibo, having been put off by the price tag of Jarrett Brantway. Now, that's odd because they play different positions. Brantway plays left-side centre-back and is obviously left-footed, so also a different profile than Todibo, who's right-footed and plays right-side centre-back. Jadon Sancho would be open to restarting his Manchester United career and returning to the club if Erik ten Hag leaves. Manchester United want to sell Anthony this summer. I have an old lawnmower I'd like to sell. The engine is seized on it. One of the wheels is missing. It was in the house before I moved in. It was left at the back of the garage in the Irish rain in Cavan, which is the rainiest county in the rainiest country in the world. So you can imagine the level of rust on this thing. And I reckon I would have more chance of selling that lawnmower than they have of getting anything resembling a decent price for Anthony. Bayer Leverkusen have put a 150 million euro price tag on Florian Wirtz. I still think that would be money well spent. He's so good. Tottenham are hoping to extend the loan of Timo Werner rather than triggering their buy option. That might make sense. Arsenal, Liverpool are both interested in William Pacho, who's really good, plays for Eintracht Frankfurt, left-footed centre-back. Arsenal don't need him. They have Gabriel. They have Jakub Kivor. They don't need another centre-back, another left-footed centre-back. What they actually need is a backup right-footed centre-back who can step in if Saliba is out. But then I suppose they have Ben White, they have Tomiyasu, and they have Jurrien Timber, who this manager spent 100 million on. Bizarre. Arsenal will make Eddie Nketiah available this summer, but will ask for 40 million for Eddie Nketiah. He isn't worth half that. Tottenham are considering a move for Shakhtar Donetsk and Ukraine midfielder Georgi Sudakov. Really, really good player. Spurs will listen to offers for Brian Hill. I think they will accept any offer. Newcastle have renewed their interest in Morgan Gibbs-White. That one doesn't make sense. He doesn't fit how they play. Liverpool are set to appoint David Woodfine as assistant sporting director to Richard Hughes as he returns to Anfield less than a year after leaving the club. Yet another one driven out by the egomaniac assistant manager returning now that the assistant manager is leaving, along obviously with the manager. But it's the assistant manager that was always the problem with these personnel people. Manchester United will open talks with Kobbie Mainoo this summer. Everton are keen to extend the contract of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Really? Really? Is that something you really want to do? This is a guy who, in the last three seasons, has scored 13 goals. 13 goals in his last 79 games. And barring the hot streak during the Ancelotti reign, has scored 30 goals for your club, despite joining in the 16-17 season. 1 in 11, 8 in 44, 8 in 38, 15 in 41, 21 in 39, 5 in 18, 2 in 18, 6 in 33. Were those two seasons under Carlo real? Or were they fluke? Because right now they look fluke. Wrexham want to turn Arthur Nkunku's loan from Arsenal into a permanent deal. Could make sense for everybody. Juventus will listen to offers for Federico Chiesa. He hasn't been the same since tearing his ACL. They're not going to get... They were offered close to 100 million for him after the Euros in 2021 and turned it down. I'd be shocked if they got 40 million from now. Like, he just hasn't been. He's obviously a very, very talented player, and I love watching him, but it has not worked since he's come back from injury. 8-29 this season, 4-33 last year. He was brilliant that first year there. He just hasn't worked since. Moving on to Thursday's gossip. Barcelona and Manchester City have held talks with the representatives of Dani Olmo. Yeah, he's due to leave Leipzig, to be fair. Liverpool could move for Mohamed Kudus if Mohamed Salah leaves the club. I'd love Kudus as a wing-back under Amorim. Chelsea and Barcelona are among several clubs considering a move for Paulo Dybala. Makes absolutely no sense for either of those clubs to consider that move. Chelsea don't need him. And Barca shouldn't be spending money on a 30-year-old who'd want big wages. Shakhtar Donetsk expect to lose Georgi Sudakov this summer, with Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City and Manchester United all interested. Of those clubs, actually, I don't think he makes sense for any of them, really. Arsenal don't need him. They've got Odegaard, they've got Vieira, and he'd be too expensive to come in as a backup. Chelsea definitely don't need him. They've got a plethora of tens and attacking midfield types. Doesn't really fit for Liverpool in how Amorim plays or how Klopp currently plays. if they were to move to a box midfield with McAllister and a DM as the two, and then Sudikov and Szoboszlai more advanced, that would work, but that's not how they play. For City, I suppose that City could afford to just bring him in and have him as a squad player and develop him, and you know, maybe he succeeds KDB or something, but United, they've no need for him at all. Mexican Rafa Marquez is one of the candidates to succeed Xavi when he steps down at the end of the season. I loved Rafa Marquez as a player. He was always overrated, but he was just, he had an aura about him. Obviously managing Barcelona's B side now, it would be the cheap appointment, really. But they've had success with that kind of move before. Bayern and Tottenham have joined Manchester United in considering a move for Jarrod Branthwaite. He doesn't make sense for Tottenham because they've got Mickey van de Ven. He's not starting over him. He would make sense for Bayern, but if he went to Bayern, the best pairing they would have would be Kim Min-jae and him. And this, well, hopefully the next manager will realize that Eric Dier should not be starting for the club. Bayern are monitoring the progress of Archie Gray, but have yet to make any contract with Leeds. Every club is monitoring Archie Gray. Saudi Pro League sides are interested in Idrissa Gana Gueye, whose current contract expires at the end of the season and is unlikely to be offered a new deal. Newcastle and Liverpool are keen on Ousmane Diamande, who's also wanted by Chelsea. Newcastle can't afford him. Chelsea have no real need for him. And it's a Jack Talbot exclusive, so it's utter crap. Sean Dyche's job as Everton manager is not under threat despite their poor form. Nottingham Forest want more than 20 million for Murillo amid interest from Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United and Paris Saint-Germain. I'd imagine they'd want close to 40 million for him, being honest. Manchester United could offer Mason Greenwood as part of a deal to sign Glace and Bremer from Juventus. Well, Juve would never fail to surprise me in their poor ethical approach to things. Poor moral approach to things, I should say. Bayern Munich's forward Jamal Musiala is emerging as Manchester City's top target for the summer, while Chelsea have also monitored the situation. Wouldn't believe that given the source of it. Bayern have no intention of selling Musiala and are preparing a new contract for him. Arsenal are looking at bringing in a striker and a winger this summer, with Alexander Isak and Michael Olise among the top targets. I don't think they have a chance to get either of them, to be honest. Olise won't go to Arsenal because he won't sit behind Saka. And unless they're moving Saka to left back, it doesn't make sense. And Isak is going to cost 120 million at least. Like, Newcastle are not selling him for the 80 million that the media keep saying would be the price. It's just not going to be the price. They're going to want 120 million. Arsenal are monitoring Benjamin Sesko. That's more likely what they'll do. Gyökeres will be too expensive. Chelsea and Manchester United are also monitoring Sesko, who's a 43 million release clause. That's why I think they go there. Pep Linders has been targeted by Besiktas for their current vacant head coaching role. This is from the same people that told us he was going to Ajax not so long ago. Liverpool and PSG are considering a move for Levi Colwill. I think it makes sense for Liverpool. Chelsea need to sell before the 30th of June. So I think it makes sense to throw an offer in before then and just see what happens. Tottenham are interested in Serge Gnabry, with Bayern willing to sell. Could make some sense. Liverpool and Manchester United are among the clubs interested in Barcelona B defender Mikel Fay, but will face competition from Lille, Monaco, and Nice. That's not really competition, unless he just wants to go somewhere where he'll start every game. Spurs are leading the race for Morgan Gibbs-White. It doesn't make sense for them. Belgium striker Romelu Lukaku is expected to return to Chelsea at the end of the season, as Roma will not be able to afford the 43 million euros. Roma don't want to spend the 43 million euros. The only reason they signed him is because Tammy Abraham tore his ACL. Chelsea and Newcastle are interested in Aaron Ramsdale. I just don't believe that, to be honest. I just don't. I don't know who Darren Looney is, but I'm guessing he's a spoofer because he works for Call Offside. Newcastle are scouting Conor Gallagher. Conor Gallagher would fit at Newcastle for sure. Julian Nagelsmann is not just talking to Bayern Munich about becoming their new manager. This is from the Spielmacher podcast, which I've never heard of before. So apparently, according to this podcast, which this was yesterday, he was the front runner to replace Thomas Tuchel. He was in the mix to become the next Liverpool manager, in the mix to become the next Manchester United manager. And Volker Struth said it will be decided soon in the next 5, 6, or 7 days. That's hilarious. That's his agent. That's his agent saying that. And it came out the next day that he signed a new contract. That's good stuff. Former Liverpool and Everton boss Rafa Benitez is set to take over as manager of Sao Paulo a month after being sacked by Celta Vigo. Oh, dear. Why are they doing that? Have they not witnessed Rafa in the last while? He's not been good for many's the year. Let's have a gander here, see what's happening with Sao Paulo. So,
well, Sao Paulo confirmed a different manager.
So they started the season with Dorival Jr. He got sacked on the 7th of January. No, he didn't. He took over the Brazil job. That's what happened. He left to become the Brazil manager. Thiago Carpini took over as caretaker. No, he took over full-time. He lasted 3 months and got booted. Milton Cruz took over as the caretaker. He was the assistant manager. And Luis Subielda, apparently, is becoming the new manager. He's a bit of a journeyman, but he's decent. He's had success in different places. So yeah, the Rafa thing looks like it's nonsense. So there we go. Right, back after this. Right, welcome back. So we're joined on this Friday by Mr. Guy Drinkle. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Still
happy
bald.
Birthday.
Thank you. Liverpool tried to ruin it. Well, they did ruin it last night, to be fair. I'm still bored now.
So, you say that. My birthday was obviously about a week and a half ago. The day before my birthday, Liverpool drew with Manchester United. And then a couple of days afterwards, they lost heavily at home to Atalanta and then lost at home to Crystal Palace. So, at least your birthday week involved a win.
Well, is it a win?
Not really.
Are we going to beat Fulham? It's all right, don't.
Probably not. Right, we have 7 Premier League games and 2 FA Cup games for this weekend. So let's get ourselves stuck in and see what's what.
We do, and it seems like quite an important weekend for the bottom of the table, especially on the Saturday, and we kick off at 3 o'clock because TNT can't be bothered, seemingly. And we start off with Luton hosting Brentford, Dave. Where's my table? There's my table. Luton sat on 25 points, Brentford on 32. I mean, Brentford probably 1 point now from safety, maybe a win just to be extra secure. But I wouldn't say Crystal Palace are in the relegation scrap anymore, to be fair. So probably a draw would do. Whereas Luton, you'd say a win changes this, considering Everton and Forest are playing each other. And Everton's situation gets worse by the week, seemingly. So this is a must win for Luton. Not even a draw. I think they've just got to win this game.
I fully agree. Because of that other fixture that you mentioned with Everton taking on Forest, one or both of them are dropping points. So if you can win, you're jumping at least one of them. Now, if they draw, you'll jump just Forest, or you'll jump the team that loses. But it gets you out of the bottom three, which just psychologically can be a massive thing considering that both Luton and Forest will only have four games left after this weekend, if they were to come out ahead of Forest, that would just be a massive thing. If they come out ahead of Everton, Everton do have a game in hand. But like you said, Everton's situation goes from bad to worse, and there's a real threat of administration hanging over this club now, which would be a 9-point deduction. And again, if you can win this game and they get that 9 points lobbed off at some point, that could be the difference, because even if you were to then lose your remaining games, it should still be enough to keep you above them. It's a tough game, though, because like Brentford won last weekend. Brentford haven't been good, but you would say that man for man, they're a better team than Luton. This is very much a down year for Brentford, whereas this does feel like Luton kind of really maxing out what they have. And I know they've had injuries as well, but not to the extent that Brentford have had. At the moment, though, Luton are absolutely just smashed with injuries. So you've got no Tom Lockyer, no Marvellous Nakamba, no Jacob Brown, no Dan Potts, and no Amari Bell for the rest of the season. Adebayo and Ogbena are out for another couple of weeks. Anderson's another couple of weeks. And then Menji and Lokonga are both expected back this weekend, but you never know. They might still take another week or so. Gabriel Oshu is return unknown because he's got some bone bruising. That's a lot of players and a lot of important players for a small, you know, smaller squad. Brentford, no De Silva. I mean, that poor fella has just had such tough times with injuries since they got promoted.
He's really good when he plays, isn't he?
Really good. He's such a talented player, but he can never stay fit. Now he's out till like November with a knee injury. So that's really tough. Aaron Hickey, done for the season. Rico Henry, done for the season. Ben Mee, done for the season. But Christopher Ayer and Christian Norgaard, they're hoping to have back this weekend. Norgaard in particular will be huge just to bolster that midfield. And Ayer has been playing quite well in a defence that hasn't been good. If we look at the form table over the last 10 games, Luton are bottom, 1 win and 2 draws. But Brentford are 16th with 1 win and 4 draws. So not like they've been much better. Home form, Luton are 14th with 2 wins and a draw. That's out of 6 games, obviously. Brentford's away form is 15th, 1 win, 1 draw. Form and everything points to a draw, but it is must win for Luton. And they do find a little bit of magic sometimes at Kenilworth Road. So I'm going to pick Luton to win 2-1. I wouldn't be surprised if they go 1-0 down and then have another fight back and end up getting the win. So 2-1 to Luton Town.
Yeah, it's such a shame. All the injuries seem to be in the spine as well, because Adebayo was playing really well. Lokonga was really playing well as well. The defence has been a bit hit and miss, as you'd expect for a team down there. But Menji, Osho, Amari Bell, they're not all starters, but they can be starters. It's just a real shame, really.
That's the thing. But and like the times that we saw Menji and Osho as two-thirds of that back three, they actually did look fairly competent as a defensive group, because they had pace and athleticism and aggression, and they were able to work really, really well as a unit. That hasn't always been the case when maybe there's a player in there who's a bit more slower footed. So, yeah, I mean, for Rob Edwards, it's really tough to continue to try and patch this defense together as defenders get injured week after week. And like you said, with the midfield as well, Lokonga and Barkley were looking like a decent pairing. We've seen Nakamba and Barkley look a decent pairing, but both of them being out is a huge blow. If you were missing one, you'd be desperate to have the other. If you have neither, it does make things very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll move on to a championship six-pointer. Is that too harsh? Probably not for Sheffield United, unfortunately. I mean, Burnley, It's a shame because they have started to improve somewhat. These last couple of games where the keeper, we bigged up Murich, and he has played well, but just the basically self-destructive errors have just cost them crucial points, which could have rescued them.
Yeah, he's cost them 4 points over the last two games. One against Everton, three against Brighton, which had they gotten, they'd only be a point behind Luton and 2 points behind Forest, and survival would be a real thing for them. Now, they're only 6 points behind Forest with five games left. So they're not dead and buried yet. Sheffield United, you would say, are done. But it seems unlikely that Burnley will manage to get themselves out of the mess. If we look at the injury issues for both teams for this weekend, Burnley, no Ramsey, no Byer, no Redmond, no Aldekeel. They're all done for the season. Kolasinac is working his way back, but still a few weeks away. O'Shea is back from suspension, and Ekdal should be good to go. Sheffield United, loads of injuries. Max Lowe, Narrington Davies, Chris Basham, all done for the season. Wouldn't expect we'd see John Egan again this year. Not sure we'll see George Baldock this year. Tom Davies is working his way back, but still probably a month away. Jack Robinson and Jaden Bogle are unlikely for this weekend. Rhian Brewster's back to full training, so that's a big plus. But the biggest one of all, and he's still about a month away, he might make the squad for the last game of the season, is Daniel Jebison's back in training, and he has missed the entire season through an illness, which we don't know what it was. It was kept private, which is obviously his right. But it's just great to see that he's back training. And that, like, it's just a huge blow. It's a big relief because you were fearing the worst. You know, we've had the situation at Bournemouth with David Brooks, where obviously he was taken ill, and he's made his return. We don't know what the illness was to Jebison, but potentially something similar or in that same kind of realm. And thankfully, it looks like he's made a full recovery as well. So that's a big positive just on a human footing. But on a football footing, there's no positives for Sheffield United. Last 10 games, they are 19th, one win, three draws, but they've conceded 30 goals in their last 10. Home form, Sheffield United are last, no wins, three draws. Away form, Burnley are 18th, no wins, two draws. It does reek of a draw. It certainly reeks of goals because neither of these teams can defend to save their lives. Burnley are averaging over two goals conceded a game, and Sheffield United are not a whole lot off averaging three goals conceded per game. So I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
Would that be it for Burnley as well, you reckon?
Yeah, if Luton win, I think that's probably game over. Because Luton would move to 28, Everton would have a minimum of 27, potentially 28 with a draw would mean Forest also of 28, or Everton would stay on 27 and Forest would go to 29. Burnley would have four games left to make up at minimum of 7 points. I'm just not seeing it. So
yeah, I'd agree with that. We'll turn our attention to the FA Cup, which is next up time-wise, and we have Man City. I was going to say Man City hosting Chelsea. It's obviously at Wembley. We have Man City against Chelsea. To me, Dave, this seems like a really good opportunity for Chelsea. We know they love getting to a final. It's not... Well, they won't be playing Liverpool in the final, which will help them. But Man City played 120 minutes, obviously went out a big emotional damage, but we saw Haaland coming off because he was knackered. It sounded like De Bruyne literally couldn't take a penalty. I think he was still on. I might be mistaken there.
No, he has to come off as well.
Oh, did he? Right.
Yeah. So he was knackered too.
Yeah.
So good opportunity. That's the thing. It's the big kind of emotional dump coming out of that game where you've given everything across 210 minutes and two legs. You haven't actually been beaten, but you've lost your European Cup that you had, you know, a fairly good chance of retaining. You've lost it on penalties at home, which is horrible. And the physical toll of that game. So that's potentially a big one for City. Now, to get to this point, City beat Huddersfield 5-0 at home, went to Spurs and won 1-0, went to Luton and won 6-2, and then beat Newcastle 2-0. Chelsea beat Preston 4-0 at home, needed a fourth-round replay to beat Villa 3-1, beat Leeds 3-2 at home, beat Leicester 4-2 at home. Chelsea actually drawn at home in every round in this competition. Only one away game was the replay against Villa. Chelsea have played City really well this year. There was obviously the 4-4 at the Bridge back in November, a game that I think everybody felt Chelsea should have won. And then there was the 1-1 up at the Etihad in February. Again, a game that City needed a late Rodri equaliser, as he'd done in the first game, 86 minutes in the first game, 83 minutes in the second one, to rescue a point. So Chelsea have played City really well. Cole Palmer's obviously in incredible form at the minute. City will have tired legs. Rodri has already talked about needing a rest, and he played the entirety of the game on Wednesday night. So this is probably one where you have to sit him out. So I'm not sure who they bring into the team. Maybe it's Kovacic and Nunez in midfield as a pairing. That's not great, but maybe it'll make do. But for Chelsea, that this big pitch is a chance to really punish Manchester City's tiredness. The issue for Chelsea is Stamford Bridge is quite a small pitch, so it's an adjustment for them, whereas the Etihad has a big pitch, not as big as Wembley, but it's more natural for City to play on a bigger pitch. Where are we injury-wise? Man City, KDB unlikely to play, apparently. Haaland and Akanji also asked to go off, so we'll see. Chelsea, no Fofana, no Lavia. They're done for the season. No Ogechukwu, no James, no Nkunku, no Colwell. But De Sassi should be okay. Enzo Fernandez is a doubt, as is Raheem Sterling, who's got food poisoning. I kind of fancy Chelsea. Could they then go on and win a cup? Or would they get to the cup final and do what Chelsea do? Feels like they'll probably do what Chelsea do and lose. So that would probably be to Manchester United. Do we really want Manchester United winning anything? No. So we'll go with Man City to win 2-1. No Let's logic go. In that at all.
Let's go, Coventry.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
We'll come to them on the Sunday. Back to the Premier League then. We have Wolves hosting Arsenal. Almost similar, not as many injury issues coming out of it as City. But Arsenal, big disappointment in midweek. Attacking-wise, didn't really turn up at all against Bayern Munich. They had a couple half. Not even chances, more opportunities before the chance, really. A real shame for them. But coming back, I suppose it's a late kickoff, but it's a difficult opposition. I mean, Cunha's come back and been in excellent form. Huang's back now. It's just a shame Neto's not back, I suppose. But Wolves, probably not the opposition you want to come back to after a long midweek and a emotional breaking midweek.
Yeah, and obviously losing last weekend as well to Villa, so for Arsenal, there might be just a little sense of desperation among the players. Last 10 games, Arsenal have the best form in the league, and Wolves are only 11th with 4 wins, 2 draws. Arsenal have 8 wins, 1 draw. Wolves' home form, 12th, 3 wins, 3 defeats. Arsenal's away form is the best in the league, 5 wins and a draw. Arsenal's only injury is Jurrien Timber, which has obviously been the case most of the season for them. They've been very, very fortunate. But for Wolves, Neto is out. Aït Nouri is a bit of a doubt. Semedo should be okay. Bellegarde, I think, is done for the year. And Craig Dawson, he's been making the bench of late, but I don't think he's quite right. So I think they were talking about maybe minor surgery. We'll see. If you look at Wolves this year, when the top teams have gone to Molineux, Liverpool went there and Wolves destroyed them for 45 minutes. Now, Liverpool did bounce back and end up winning the game 3-1. But they were given a massive fright in that first half and should have gone in 2 or 3 down at half time. They then beat Manchester City there, beat them 2-1. Which was a great performance and a great result. They drew at home with Aston Villa. Were probably a little bit unfortunate not to win that one. They beat Tottenham at home 2-1. They beat Chelsea at home 2-1. So against the bigger teams at home, they really have performed well. The only one of the big six who's gone there and gotten a result this season is Manchester United, who were very, very fortunate to get that result. Wolves didn't bother turning up until halftime. United were 2-0 up. Wolves battered them in the second half and then should have won the game, or should have won the game, but we're going to get a draw out of the game. But Kobbie Mainoo scored an absolute worldie. One of a couple that boy's gotten this year. I fancy Wolves to cause Arsenal problems, but I think Arsenal should win. So we'll go 3-1 to Arsenal.
Yeah, it's probably the game where it'll answer a lot of questions about Arsenal progressing from last season. Obviously, they're not as good points-wise as they were at this point, or maybe a couple game weeks ago now, but if they can bounce back after going out the Champions League and their first loss, I think, of the calendar year, isn't it? The Aston Villa one, or certainly in the Premier League. Maybe they won't win, but at least it might show they can then challenge City to the last game of the season rather than bottling it.
Rather than folding like they did last year.
Yeah.
The thing for Arsenal as well is that this is one of their easier games that's left, because next they get Chelsea, then they go to Spurs, then Bournemouth, which is another one of the easier ones, that's at home. Then they go to United, and then they get Everton. So you're looking at their last 6 games. Chelsea home will be tough, because Chelsea have played them really well as well this year. Spurs away is obviously going to be really tough, because Spurs are A, a really good team, and B, their biggest rivals. And then United will be difficult, because it's a big rivalry game. So you're looking at Wolves, Bournemouth, and Everton, and saying they have to win those games. Like, there's no choice but to win those 3 and hope that they do well enough in the other 3 that they can overhaul City. So they have to win this game. This is must win for Arsenal. So, and look, you would expect them to win. They are a better team than Wolves. There's no question there. So anything less than 3 points here is pretty much a disaster for Arsenal.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on to Sunday, then, we have the big one in terms of the relegation race, and that is Everton hosting Nottingham Forest, Dave. I mean, Everton. I know you
could have just left it there. Everton. 20 seconds of silence while people just allow it to wash over themselves.
Just put 20 seconds of silence. I'll put the ad break there. Then another 20 seconds. I mean, there's obviously more worse situations in the lower leagues of football. Mm. But in terms of a high-end, well, what should be a high-end Premier League side, is there a more depressive club? There's just nothing promising.
No, went through it on Tuesday. Went through it on Tuesday, Guy. The last 29 years since they won that FA Cup, there's just been so little to cheer about if you're an Everton fan.
Mm.
1 top 4 finish, 1 cup final, 3 other semi-finals, handful of top half finishes, of course, mostly under Moyes, but turgid football for much of the Moyes reign. The only time they really played a decent brand of football was the first 2 years under Martinez, and then for a brief spell under Marco Silva. But like, they haven't even had fun football, let alone the results. Because, you know, like, you look at certain teams and they're just a bit... like Leeds, for example, under Bielsa, right? They didn't always have success, but the football was incredibly fun to watch. Everton haven't had that. They haven't had anything to really cheer about for 29 years. And I genuinely believe this, that the best thing for that club and for that fan base would be for them to go down, completely reset, get rid of everybody, not just reset the playing staff, but reset the expectations of the fan base, who, for whatever reason, are incredibly entitled, despite the fact most of them that you see on social media weren't alive to see the great Everton team of the 80s. Most of them weren't even alive to see Everton win the cup in 95. But yet they have this sense of entitlement, the whole Everton aren't we culture. If they got relegated, it might really just humble them. And we've seen with Aston Villa, the best thing that could have happened to that club was to get relegated and be forced to rebuild and clear out all the big money dross that's there, all the high earners, all the underperforming, overrated garbage, and reset and potentially, fingers crossed, hopefully, find the right owner for that club. Because Everton, no matter what way you slice it up, are one of the biggest clubs in the country. You've got the big three, Liverpool, United, Arsenal, the original big three. You've got the...
Cheaters.
Yeah, the financially Chelsea and City. And then after that five, you've got Spurs, Villa and Everton. And they're the next three. And then it's Toon. Toon will be ninth and Leeds probably 10th. But Spurs, Villa and Everton were part of the original Big Six when the Premier League first was founded. They were the founding members behind it. They were the driving force behind it. So Everton, without question, are a bigger club than Spurs. Like, far more success. I would say probably a historically bigger fan base. Spurs probably have more newer fans, younger fans. The glamour, London, no real success because they didn't win anything, but the decent one they had under Poch brought them in a few. But Everton are historically just a bigger club than Spurs.
So they never really found that Poch figure, did they? I mean, Spurs had Harry Redknapp, who kind of made them a Champions League side for a little while, but they were UEFA Club Cup for most of my childhood. Maybe not every year, but they were fifth to seventh most of the time. But so were Everton, and they just never really took that next step in my...
No, program. Like, even that's the thing. Even their European runs, just, like, they didn't bring any joy to the club. Like, obviously, Moyes had them in Europe a number of times, and fair play to them. But, like, when you really dig into the runs they had in Europe, it was just quite depressing to look at. So 05-06, they'd finish fourth in the league. They get knocked out in the third qualifying round of the Champions League and in the first round of the UEFA Cup. So they got no real European football that year. 07-08, the round of 16 in the UEFA Cup. 08-09, the first round. Then it becomes the Europa League. They go out in the round of 32 in 09-10. They don't qualify again for Europe until Martinez gets them in. They make the round of 16. But if you remember those games, they were desperate to watch. And then the last time they were in Europe was the 17-18 season. And they went out in the group stage of the Europa League. Like, it's even simple things. Like, I was looking at, top goal scorer. And there's just years where it's like 9 goals, 11, 10, 11, 15 for Yakubu, 21 in all competitions. That was huge for them. Luis Saha got 13, 15 in all competitions. Then it's 9, 10, 9, 11. Then Lukaku arrives. Now there's something to be excited about. This absolute monstrous goal-scoring machine. 20, 25, and 26 goals in all competitions in 3 years. And then he leaves, and it's 11 goals from Rooney. And it's Sigurdsson and Richarlison with 14, and Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison with 13. And then Calvert-Lewin has that really good breakout year, and then he gets injured. And then it's Richarlison with 10 goals, and last year it's Dwight McNeil with 7. Like, 7 goals was your top goal scorer. And then you look at this season, and it's not exactly been much better. Like, there's nothing. The top goal scorer this year is Abdoulaye Doucouré. He's got 6 goals. We're in April. That's your top scorer. Calvert-Lewin has 6. Beto has 5. You paid 30 million for him. He's got 3 league goals.
More than I thought, to be fair.
It's just depressing. And like, again, I've said this before, there are some players in that squad that I really like. But if it were me walking in the door, Pickford is gone, Keane is gone, Young is gone, I'd consider selling Michael Enko just to raise funds. I'm keeping Seamus Coleman because he's a good Irish lad. Doucouré is gone. Andre Gomes is gone. I keep Idrissa Gana Gueye just for depth. But Beto, out the gap. And Calvert-Lewin, you've got to go. Danjuma, thanks, but no thanks. I might try and keep Jack Harrison. But, like, I don't understand it. I don't understand anything they've really done in the last few years. Going back to when remember they became the Merseyside billionaires and they were telling us all about the power shift? I don't understand anything that's happened since then. It's just been a mess. Like, people need to remember, Everton were deducted points for cheating. Cheating to be incompetent. Like, Man City are facing 115 charges. But Man City won title after title after title. Nottingham Forest got points deducted. They got points deducted for getting promoted into the Premier League, for ambition. Chelsea are facing an investigation. They won title after title after title. Everton have done nothing of any importance or note for 29 years. They've been punished for incompetence. They cheated to survive in the division because they'd been so incompetent and wasted so much money and wasted everybody's time. So they don't deserve anyone's sympathy. They really don't. And I actually just want them to go down. Because I'd like to just see that club get taken out of the hands of these people that own it now, kept away from 777 Partners, who sound like a dreadful set of lads.
Yeah.
And find a proper owner for this institution of English football. There has to be someone out there who can give this club and its history the future it deserves, the way that Wes Edens and co. are doing with Aston Villa.
Well, you think of all the lads who were linked with Chelsea. One of them must. You get in a done stadium, basically, or soon to be done.
Yeah.
If they do go down, it's going to be even cheaper distressed asset than it is now. And you'd hope it should be easy enough to come back up. Because we've seen how Newcastle and...
But even if it took a couple of years, at least it'd be a couple of years where they'd win. They'd win games. Like...
True.
Look at their wins. I went through it on Tuesday. Look at their wins over the last few years. They've won 9 games this year from 32. I went through their home wins for the last few years. People are paying their hard-earned money to go and watch not only awful football, but also watch their team lose. So again, to use the Leeds example, at least when people went under Bielsa, even if they lost, the match was fun. You got enjoyment. You felt like you got something for your money. Everton give you nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's not the most fun, is it? On the other side of this game, which we kind of got away from, is Forest. I was talking to Tadiwa on Tuesday. I'm not sure how this lot are down where they are, because the talent in that squad, and I know they've had injuries and they have too many players, yada, yada, yada. But you look at it, I mean, maybe they are inconsistent, and that's probably why. But I just don't, as a collection of players, I just don't see how they're this dire. I know they've had a points deduction. But you look, and even as a Liverpool fan, I'm thinking, I'd take Danilo, I'd take Murillo, I'd take a gamble on Gibbs White. There's probably a handful of others you take a gamble on. But
yeah,
like Murillo, we probably need a left centre-back. And think maybe not the first choice target, but I wouldn't say no.
He'd be on the list, wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Like, it's a funny thing. I don't really understand why Ibrahim Sanguer seems to have been kind of frozen out. Because him and Daniil would be a brilliant midfield pairing. And yet Ryan Yates is starting. It's just not a Premier League caliber player.
And the sold Mangala, who was starting.
Yeah, that's the thing. And then you look at the defence, and you look at how many different iterations of centre-back pairings they had this season with the likes of Willy Bolly and Felipe and whoever else playing in there. And then all of a sudden they go to Omar Bamadeli and Murillo, and it looks really good. Like, it's a really solid pairing, and they're both young. It's something you can build on. You've got Hudson-Odoi playing quite well at the moment. Gibbs White's playing out of his mind. You've got Elanga. You've also got Gio Reyna there. I know it's only on loan, but it's a lot of talent. That's a really talented group behind the striker. Now, Noah Wanniyi does hurt, but Chris Wood's been in the form of his life. Midfield is playing pretty well, even with Yates in there. And like, the defence has been better. It's hard to understand. And yeah, you're right, they did get a points deduction, but obviously so did Everton. So they'd be below Everton regardless. They'd be 17th if all the points were given back to everybody. It's hard to understand. It really is. If you look at the form table, last 10 games, Forest are 14th, 2 wins, 3 draws. The Ev, 18th, 1 win, 4 draws. Home form, Everton 17th, 1 win, 3 draws. Away form, Forest 17th, only 2 draws. Their away form is dreadful and has been since they came up, to be fair. If we take a quick gander, this season, they've won 2 games away from home and had 4 draws. So they beat Chelsea and they beat Newcastle. Now, how they did either of those things, I have no idea. They've also gone to Palace, Wolves, Bournemouth and Luton and gotten draws. So they've actually done, like, that's not bad. It's dreadful to lose 10 of 16 away games. Like, that is really, really poor. But at the same time, the results they've gotten have actually been fairly impressive. Last season, they were just as bad away from home. They won 1 with 5 draws. Their only away win was at Southampton. They drew at Brighton. They drew at Chelsea. They drew at Crystal Palace. I've missed one somewhere. It doesn't really matter. Oh, Bournemouth. So unbeaten at Stamford Bridge since coming up, but dreadful since away from home since coming up. And that is the biggest issue for them. And they're not good enough to just solely rely. Well, they are. They're good enough to stay up, probably just solely relying on home form, but not good enough to do anything more than really just survive. Now, injury-wise, Noah Wanyi, Alang is a doubt, and Willie Bolly is also out, which, you know, not a bad thing. For Everton, no Dele, Calvert-Lewin's a doubt, Gana Gay is a doubt, Branthwaite is a doubt, which would be huge, a huge blow.
Michael Keane, let's get
Michael,
it.
Michael Keane back in. Michael Keane, oh, Michael Keane and James Tarkowski. No Seamus Coleman, he's probably done for the season. Nathan Patterson is out and probably done for the season. And Lewis Dobbin is a doubt, but hopefully back soon. Oh, what a stinker of a game. Let's just quickly go. Well, quickly, I've been talking for 20 minutes. Let's just go the draw. Let's go 1-1 and just everybody move on with their lives.
Yeah, one. That's obviously on telly and it'll be great to watch that one. we'll go through these 3 o'clock kickoff ones quickly because we did do too much on Everton there. Villa hosting Bournemouth, Dave. Villa a lot expended in on Thursday, or yesterday, I should say. Bournemouth are just a good side. I mean, again, talking to Tadiwa, since that initial spell where it was a struggle for Iriola, if I can speak, they've just been a really good, consistent side. Maybe not ready to challenge for the European places next season, but you can see it progressing to something like that in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, they're on that Brighton trajectory, aren't
they? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But Villa's tiredness, I mean, it was a long game, and we know their squad's not the biggest, and obviously there's a few injuries as well. They have to win for the top four race. But Bournemouth's probably not the best side they want to play.
No, I don't think you'd want to be facing Bournemouth coming off that epic adventure last night where they had to go to penalties to advance past Lille, and obviously huge expenditure against Arsenal last weekend as well, and that does give me concern for Villa this weekend. Last 10 games, Villa are 6th, 5 wins, 2 draws. Bournemouth are 10th, 4 wins, 3 draws. Home form, Villa's has not been good. 2 wins and a draw in their last 6. Away form, Bournemouth isn't great. 1 win, 3 draws. But injury-wise, no Boubacar Kamara, no Buendia, no Mings, no Ramsey, all done for the season. Moreno's out a few weeks. Douglas Luiz is suspended. And Zaniolo is out. He had a great game against Arsenal, but obviously picked up a muscle injury. For Bournemouth, no Ryan Fredericks, no Tavernier, no Sinisterra. I'm guessing we don't see any of them again this year. Metham, Semenyo, and Tyler Adams probably not ready for this one. I'm going to go with the draw. I'll go 1-1. I think you'll just see a bit of a stale Villa performance. And with just Bournemouth missing Semenyo and Adams and a couple of others, it feels like a draw. We'll go 1-1.
Yeah, probably quite fun, though, to be fair. Whereas this next one, maybe not so. I mean, I suppose Palace with Eze and Elise coming back last week, they are capable of being more entertaining. They're hosting West Ham, who... again, just very strange. Obviously drew with Bayer Leverkusen last night, which is a good result, but obviously still went out. Palace, though, I mean, they outplayed Liverpool for a half and then just kind of let Liverpool shoot and it didn't matter, which is every team should be tactic for the rest of the season. But we'll come on to that in a minute. I feel like with the lads fit, Elise and Eze, they're probably favourites for this one.
Yeah, and when you look at some of the issues that West Ham have at the moment, where Areola's not fit, Bowen clearly not at 100%, played last night, didn't look right. Agard went off last night. He's unlikely to play this weekend. Mavroponis is carrying a knock and he's been dreadful of late. Calvin Phillips has been out and he's unlikely to play. And then obviously poor George Earthy, who made his debut and got knocked clean out. He's going to miss out of this one as well. Palace, no Sam Johnston, no Doucouré, no Guehi, no Holding, no Richards, no Rakitić, and no Matthias Franke. Like you said, Palace won last weekend, and just with the nature of the Premier League, that probably means they get walloped at home this weekend, but you never know. Last 10 games, Palace are 15th. West Ham, if I can find them, are 13th. So neither of them playing very well. Palace's home form is actually not bad. It's 11th, 3 wins and a draw. West Ham's away form is middle of the pack, 10th, 2 wins and a draw. Elise and Eze make me think that Palace will win this game. And Palace, like, they're pretty safe now anyway, but one more win and, like, that's it. They don't need to worry anymore, because to then go down, say Luton would need to win all of the, even if Luton matched the result this weekend, Luton would need to win all of the remaining games. It's just not going to happen. Palace to win 2-1.
Yep, I could see that. Next up, we have the other FA Cup semi-final with Coventry against United. It seems like Coventry's playoff hopes basically ended, a bit of inconsistency after that Wolves win, which is a shame, considering where they were last season. But I suppose they lost a good... they're probably two best players, if memory serves. But, I mean, an FA Cup semi-final, it's been a hell of a run anyway.
Yeah.
And United do United things.
Yeah, they do. And, like, it's actually very, very impressive that Coventry have done this year, because if you look at what happened in the summer, Gyökeres goes, their best player. Gustavo Hammer, probably the second best player, he goes as well. And they bring in Ellis Sims. He's done okay. He hasn't been great, but he hasn't been bad. Hadji Wright comes in. Again, he's been a bit hit and miss, but, you know, you can see something there. They also sign players like Milan van Ewijk, the young Dutch right back, who's been really impressive. Sakamoto, the Japanese winger, looks a proper player. You know, they bring in a couple more loans. They patch some things up, because it wasn't just the two boys up front that they lost. They also had the Man City defender, whose name is escaping me. He's gone to Doyle. Leicester. Yes, Callum Doyle. He was a big part of their team last year as well, and he's gone. So they've had to really replace three vital players, including two of their best players. They've just done it really, really well, and I've been really impressed. Bobby Thomas arrived from Burnley. Really impressed with what I've seen of him. There's Labadie, is that his name? Labudie? He looks really good. The Jamaican defender looks another one that's really, really good. And I'm just so impressed by the club and their ability to constantly revive the squad when key players leave. It is so impressive how they do it. They bring in players on loan, like they've got Lewis Binks in at the moment on loan from Bologna. Doesn't play every game, but he's been really good. Brought in Liam Kitching, another centre-back, really good. Mark Robbins just finds ways to get the best out of players, and he can mix and match and chop and change. Doesn't have to settle on, you know, a necessarily nailed-on starting 11. There's a handful of players that'll start every game or close to it, but then he just finds ways to make it work with others. Like Josh Eccles this season's been really good in midfield. Callum O'Hare might be the best player at the club, but he doesn't start every game. He's only started 16 league games. Part of that is injuries. Part of it is just the manager rotating, because he's also come off the bench in 12, so he's been fit. Ben Sheaf's really good. Player they picked up from the Arsenal Academy when he was told he wasn't good enough for Arsenal. Brought into Coventry, and he's been tremendous for them. This is just what this manager does. He revives players and revives his own squad. And I'm so impressed. So, so impressed. If I was a Premier League club in the lower half looking for a new manager, Mark Robbins would get strong consideration. Whether or not he'd leave Coventry, I don't know. He's been there now 7 years, and he's done an incredible job, obviously bringing them up through the divisions, and mm-hmm. very, very, very nearly brought them into the Premier League last season. Got to the playoff final, but just he's an incredible manager. He's done an incredible job. Like you said, they've had a really, really good run thus far in the competition. I've watched all the games that they've played in this competition because a couple of good friends of mine are Coventry fans, so you like to throw them a bit of support. They beat Oxford United 6-2, drew 1-1 away with Sheffield Wednesday, but then beat them 4-1 at home in the replay. They beat Maidstone 5-0. Maidstone had had a great run themselves as a you know, much lower league club. But then they went to Wolves and pulled out a 3-2 win, a game in which they were one up, conceded two late goals, looked dead and buried, and just wouldn't give up, and got two very late goals, 97 and 100 minutes in stoppage time, and won the game. Absolutely incredible. Incredible stuff. Casey Palmer, another player I should have mentioned, who's really, really impressive as part of that group. Another one that was told by Chelsea he wasn't good enough, went to Bristol, sort of reinvigorated himself a little bit, but he's been different class since joining Coventry. So impressed. Obviously, they take on United. United beat Wigan 2-0. They beat Newport 4-2. They beat Forest 1-0. And then they got gifted a win by Liverpool, a game in which they were absolutely dominated. And Liverpool just, well, they shat the bed, really. I expect United to win the game. Injury-wise, though, Malacia, Martial, Shaw, the Gnome, Lindelof, and Varane all out. Evans, a major doubt. McTominay, Maguire, and Anthony should be fine to go. You'd expect United to win, but they've got a lot of injuries, especially in their defensive unit. And if Coventry just catch them cold, you never know. But I'm going to say 2-0 to United.
Yeah, if United win, I'll be watching Matt Goldbridge afterwards.
If United lose, that's probably the nail in the coffin for Ten Hag.
Yeah, they can announce Gareth Southgate there and then, which would be the best moment in Liverpool history, I think. Anyway, last game, Premier League again. 4:30 kickoff, Fulham hosting Liverpool, Dave. 1-1, should we pencil that in?
Well, there I was last week picking Liverpool to lose 1-0, thinking I might reverse jinx some form, and instead they lost 1-0. Last 10, Liverpool 3rd, 6 wins, 2 draws. Fulham 7th, 5 wins, 1 draw. So really good from Fulham. Home form, Fulham are 10th, 3 wins and a draw. Away form, Liverpool are 3rd, 4 wins and a draw. Injury-wise, Liverpool obviously in a much better situation than they've been in for most of the year. But Fulham, no injuries. So like you just don't get better than that. And the Liverpool's injuries are Matip and Alcantara, who we don't expect to see play for the club again, and Conor Bradley. So he's the only one that's out that you would say might have a chance of playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about Liverpool anymore. I really don't. I did Daily Red. I have to do Scouted next, and Carol's going to make me talk about them. So let's just say 1-1. Let's just say 1-1. It's a tough place to go. Fulham are a decent team. Liverpool look shaky defensively. They lack control in midfield, and their forwards either can't get a shot off or can get 50 shots off and can't find the back of the net. So we'll go 1-1.
And thus ends Liverpool's title charge. God, what a depressing end. And that was the last game.
It was indeed the last game. It's a bit of a tough weekend now, to be totally honest. It's not filling me with joy or excitement, which, you know, is a bit of a shame, obviously. But we will leave it there, and that's a wrap for today's show. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I did recording. Before we part ways, let's take a moment to acknowledge the support of Skybet, the true champion of the fans. For over a decade, Skybet has not only sponsored the EFL, but has shown a deep commitment to enhancing the fan experience through betting and beyond. It's clear Skybet stands for the fans, ensuring our love of the game is always celebrated. And as we close, I do urge you to remember that if you're engaging with betting, do so responsibly. Gambling is for those 18 plus. For anyone with a gambling issue or who's maybe curious about gambling, do check out begambleaware.org to get more information. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Happy birthday, guy. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.